Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 183 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. You're joined by me, I'm Al, and Anton. Hello, Anton.
Hello, Alistair. Are you feeling particularly spooky this evening?
I am feeling very spooky because it is Halloween when we record this episode, and unfortunately we have no Mike. He was supposed to be with us. He came ridiculously close to us. So close, but then a wicked witch came along and turned him into a frog. So he's now hopping around the northeast of Scotland looking for someone to kiss him, and apparently that's not going very well.
Yeah, apparently tiny frog cans aren't very good for audio interfaces. It's a very sad, sad tale, but nevertheless, we're going to be spooked by how much news we've got this week.
I see what you did there. Very good indeed. Well, before we talk about our spooky news, have you been spooking yourself by playing terrifying, scary games this week?
I have murdered myself in terms of my playing habits, as I've made a terrible mistake, Alistair. I was an absolute buffoon that thought I could play just a little bit of American Truck Simulator, and it's all I played. So I have started up a new venture in it, in my new company called This Isn't Europe, USA. It's going very, very well, and I've played way, way too much, and I regret booting it up. I'm a very foolish man, Alistair.
Ha! You absolute muppet, you, frankly. That is the only word I can come up for. You are a muppet.
Yeah.
Well, I, on the other hand, have played a scary amount of games, particularly on Sunday, because Kiddo and I were left in the house on our own. Other half has disappeared off to America for a conference and left me and child. Everybody knows what happens when you leave a dad and son in the house on their own. They play video games. So we did. We played a lot. We played some Mario Party. Played some Mario Odyssey in two-player mode, by the way. I played as Cappy. It worked a lot better than I thought it would do. Yeah. It was actually quite good fun. We played a bit of Mario Golf, and then we played some Lego Jurassic Park, which itself was actually quite scary. So yeah, we had a gaming day, and it was great.
I'm glad to hear the Mario Odyssey mode is quite good, because, you know, it's not a full two-player experience, but, you know, it's something.
It's something, that's it. So, I mean, he did really well playing through Kirby, and he really enjoyed it. We finally finished Kirby, like, we completed the whole thing. Didn't get sort of every single one of the things you got to collect, but we completed the story and the other bit. And it was like, we need a new challenge. So I thought, well, let's introduce him to the world of Mario Odyssey. And he thoroughly enjoyed it, but he enjoyed it better with Daddy, because when he gets stuck, I can at least kind of give him a few hints, tips, and from what I can vaguely remember of playing it 5 years ago when it first came out, which is quite a thought in and of itself. So yeah, it's been good fun. So yes, that's largely been my gaming week. But in the middle of the week, got some good news, because we got another new Patreon, which means it's time for a Patreon shout-out woohoo.
Indeed. So, Alistair, who is our new lovely Patreon?
We have got a lovely new N64 tier patron going by the name of Firefang, which, by the way, is probably the coolest patron name we've got out there. So, Firefang, woohoo!
Thank you so much for the support. It really helps us out. It's lovely to get people in the Discord community, the patron, and, of course, getting more people to join us for all our extra shows, which is very exciting. We've just wrapped up doing our last call before the actual show. You know, everything is upside down. It's fantastic. We also have the show called The Prequel Roundup, and we've recently put in an order, allegedly, for new Mug Club items, which is all very exciting. We do keep ourselves busy with our Patreon content.
We really do love the fact you used the word allegedly. I mean, we've put our order in, but I still haven't had any confirmation yet in an email saying it's coming from... the supplier. I'm just going to leave it there. I'm just going to call them the supplier. It'll be fine, Anton. It'll be fine. You've designed an amazing mug. It's cool. It's fun. It ties in with one of our extra shows. It's going to be cool. People will enjoy it when we eventually get it.
Indeed. But, yeah. It was our last mug. We had a little bit of a kerfuffle. And then the people that made it were like, we promise this is never happening again. You know, here's a little bit to, you know, soothe your troubles. And boom, look at it. They've done it again.
Ha rumpf, we need a better supplier. It is on my list. For next year, I'm finding a better supplier. Anywho, enough grumbling. I think we should start talking about some games, because that's what people listen to this show for, to find out what's happening in the world of Nintendo Switch. And first up, we have... Actually, I should pause, because we've got a jingle here. Al, shut up. Jingle.
Tell us the people want to know.
All right, we've got a jingle out of the way. Now let's talk some news. Valeo Studios has announced, and we're very excited about this, Garfield Lasagna Party for the Nintendo Switch, published by Microids. Woohoo!
Oh,
it's a board
God.
Game party game. I know, it's featuring minigames and lasagna, coming out on the 10th of November for $34.99. I mean, what is not to like? Well, actually, is there anything not like, Anton?
Well, you know, coming from the acclaimed team that brought us Garfield Kart, what isn't to love except a mediocre Mario Party clone? It is definitely very low on the tier list. Yeah, I guess the only thing this game has going for it is there's at least less Mario Party clones than there are Mario Kart clones. So that's something it's got.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing Mario Party this week, and it was there's something like, is it about, in the Super Mario Party, I think there's something like 85-ish minigames in there. This Garfield clone has got a whopping 32. I mean, it's doing Mario Party, and it's not even trying to do Mario Party. It's almost a third. It's not even half. It's just a lazy, lackluster version that they stuck the name Garfield on and gone, yeah, people will buy that.
Yeah.
I like the idea. I wish it was a good game, but...
Sadly, don't have the highest hopes of this one. I think, you know, it's only a matter of time until Disney decides that they want to, you know, expand their Speedsters universe and go ahead and make their own party game that will challenge this. But you know what they won't have? They won't have Odie, so it's game over.
Odie wins, that's it. Actually, you know what's actually worrying me most about this is the fact that no matter how much I hunted across the internet, all I could find was screenshots. I have not seen a single video of gameplay, and this is coming out in under 2 weeks. Doesn't bode well.
Not at all.
So, let's not waste any more time talking about Lasagna and his Garfield, and let's instead talk about Tapioca Games, who have announced Welcome to Imperium for the Nintendo Switch, published by Houndpick Games. This one is a hotel management party game, coming out in 2023. That is a weird combination of words to put together.
Indeed. It sounds very weird, but looks very familiar. It is very much a continuation of the Overcooked, Moving Out, and Tools Out sort of style of game, Party Chaos, but I'm a little bit on the fence about this. Although being a tried and tested formula, this one looks a little bit bloated in terms of the mechanics going on there. Doesn't look so like you see it, you know what you're doing. You know, you can watch Overcooked and you get it. This, it's all over the place. There's a lot you have to manage, and I think when there is a lot to manage, there has been titles that have done that better, such as PlayUp. You know, I'm a bit on the fence about this one. It's a first-time developer, and I'm, you know, a bit sceptical, Al.
Yeah, unlike Overcooked, or one of the similar ones, they sort of have a very obvious mission at the top of the screen, or you in Tools Up, you have a plan, you open up, and it tells you what your goal is. Watching the gameplay footage gives you no indication of what you're supposed to be doing, other than the fact that it all revolves around cleaning. I think. That's basically what the voiceover said in the trailer. Everything seems to be about cleaning. It does look frantic. The camera seems to pan around a lot. There seems to be a lot going on. But I actually quite like the art style of this one. It reminds me of 1990s and early noughties games, in as much as the kind of cutscene animation you had back then is kind of what the game looks like here. The art style and just the way everything moves is so familiar and so comfortable and so nostalgic that I can't help but like this game, even though I've not played it, and I do have a few worries that it may not live up to its potential.
I concur. I think hopefully, as long as they don't price it too high, it's got a lot of competition, but the one thing this game does have that it could really excel on is the fact that there is so much depth for it, at least looking at what we've got so far. You know, the managing of, one, just keeping it clean, managing the kind of slight restaurant mechanics in there of catering, managing the actual customer service, the rooms, all that together. there's a lot of game here. Hopefully it all links up nicely.
Fingers crossed, indeed. So you can go to check them if you want to. Welcome to Imperium. Next, let's talk about Thunderful, who have announced Wavetale for the Switch. It's an aquatic adventure RPG coming out on the 12th of December this year. And it looks kind of Zelda-y, but on water instead of land. That's kind of how I would describe this game.
Indeed. It very much, as you say, Zelda-like, Wind Waker almost. However, imagine if Wind Waker made more of a, you know, determined stride towards making the boating more engaging. It's very much the moving around on the water as much a part of the game as the kind of actual questing on the islands. It's very animated and jumping, and yet the actual mobility of moving around these water environments is a lot more deeply rooted. It isn't like you just click a button, go into the boat, and then you're in boat mode. It seems very, very dynamic. I'm very impressed by the mobility that they've introduced for these characters, and overall, it is very, very nice. It's definitely got the cel-shaded look of a Wind Waker HD, more so than, let's say, some of the other kind of aquatic games that we've got on Nintendo Switch. I'm very taken by this one. It's reminding me of Oceanhorn and the way that it's kind of doing Zelda, but a little bit differently. Not really competing with many of the main Zeldas that we've got on the Switch.
Yeah, it does look very, very pretty. I have to admit that. It looks like a very polished kind of title. And I don't know how it would sit with me, because when I've watched what I've seen so far, the wave movement is slightly nausea-inducing. I don't know if it's just that little cutscene or if it's like all the way through, but it did kind of make me go a bit, almost a bit queasy, for want of a better word. And it was very fluid, very beautiful. It looked very realistic in its movements, but it didn't sit well, even though it was fluid. I don't know, did you get that at all, or is this just me?
Yeah, it definitely has, let's say, more animated waves. I think combined in with the slightly platformery elements of the water, it doesn't seem like it's just a resting tide. It's definitely fighting with you a little.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is probably one that is worth checking out when it comes out, or at the very least keep an eye on the reviews, because it looks very, very promising. Our last in the main headlines at the beginning is it's a game announced by Pico. It's Glover for the Nintendo Switch, published by Cubite. 5th generation 3D platformer coming out soon. Now, Glover, Anton, sounds very familiar to me, because I vaguely remember that was on the N64, wasn't it?
Indeed, it is. I believe N64 may have had a PlayStation 1 port, but it is very much one of these failed, forgotten platformers of the era. It is admittedly pretty terrible, but I absolutely love Glover because it's the dumbest character on the planet, and there's a ball that you can bounce around, and that's tied into your movement set, and you're basically a glove in this 3D platforming world. It's more 3D than it is world. It is very primitive. However, Cubite are good at pricing games dirt cheap, as they have, especially even within of the Cubite classic line, as this is a part of. It's not going to be winning any awards, but it's a classic throwback, and why not?
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
I would just think this would be an amazing one for a remaster. Can you imagine HD Glover properly animated with modern lighting effects, a little bit of ray tracing going on? Wow, that would be a some game.
You know,
actually, you know, really, as much as I'm saying that tongue in cheek, now that I've said it out loud and started thinking about it, that would actually make for quite a good platformer made in modern days. It's a glove running around. That could be quite good fun.
You know, to be honest, some of the best ray tracing games I've seen have been Minecraft, Quake, and games of that era. You know, this here, especially with the ball, you know, that's giving me Amiga vibes. That is perfect to be translated into RTX.
I'm just thinking, like, is it completely modern graphics on a glove that ran around the perfect detailing of every stitch and sort of picks up dirt and dust and gets grubby? That could be beautiful.
So if you're wanting to hire some creative directors, get in touch, Cubite. We're here for a fee.
Yeah, I don't hear the phone ringing, Anton.
No, it went cold. The cable's actually severed itself. It's been so spooked by the proposition. It's not going well for N2K publishing and game development industries.
Dang, we should stick to what we do best. I was going to say, which is making podcasts, but people listening to this might disagree. Then again, if you listen to this, you may well be listening to us from the beginning, in which case, why? Wow. If you are, thanks. Nice to still have you with us. Let's move on and talk about a subject that we've not mentioned at all for the last 3-4 episodes, or really since we first started the podcast, and that is, yet again, Bayonetta 3. Because the saga of the voice acting is still going on. There are still new twists and turns, and we find ourselves yet again talking about it. So this week, Bloomberg published a report looking into the drama. Through leaked documentation, it's clear that Platinum Games wanted Taylor to play Bayonetta. And I think if you remember previously, she said she was offered, I think it was $3,000 or $4,000 for the job, which, according to Bloomberg's report, isn't really right. What she was offered was $3,000 to $4,000 per 4-hour session of recording, with an expected minimum of 4 to 5 sessions of recording. So that's a significant increase over what was originally reported. It then goes on to say that Taylor reportedly asked for a 6-figure sum, around about the $250,000 mark, as well as residuals in the game. Taylor then came back and claimed that that wasn't accurate, but she has now revised her original story to say she was offered $10,000, and she's discrediting the Bloomberg report, and she's continuing to ask fans to boycott the game and tweeted a list of charities that she's asking people to support instead, which has obviously prompted a whole lot of internet scrutiny. So, Anton, there's a lot to unpack there. Do you want to have a shot?
Indeed. So, starting off with the Bloomberg report, it is very revealing and is quite favourable in terms of Platinum Games, or at least, I think, discrediting Helena Taylor's narration and story here. Since this, in the content and stuff that she's put out, the main number she's been throwing around has been $10,000, up from the original $3,000 to $4,000 that she was saying before. However, the number has changed a couple times and has very much made people question her validity on this side of the story. And from what I can gather from people that are voice actors and doing this professionally, the original price, which was very much below average, now looks actually a little bit closer to expectation, or actually quite good. So has made the drama seem a little bit out of place, or her claims being a little bit out of place. Then also, details that came out was apparently the last couple games have been, aka Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2, were about 3,000 per game. So this is kind of the wage that, actually quite a good upgrade from previous wages of Bayonetta 1 and 2. And then it's all been doubled down by the fact that the list of charities that she's put out for people to support has some controversial choices in there that people have been quite keen on scrutinizing. So it is not looking good right now in terms of the situation. And yeah, it's a shame that out of all the stories that have managed to survive multiple weeks, this is the one that's done it. We don't often get stories with this much longevity, Al.
I know, this is practically turning into a Netflix series as a continuing story arc across multiple episodes, and we've not finished talking about it yet, because the story goes on. We've still got more to talk about. So the voice actor of Viola from Bayonetta 3 hosted a charity stream, generating $5,000 for TransLife, which is pretty cool in and of itself. And then Hideki Kamiya thanked Nintendo for kicking off Bayonetta 3 development and saying that he was forever indebted to Nintendo. There has just been so much around this game. It is the ultimate publicity machine.
Indeed. It is great to see that charity stream raising so much money for a good cause, especially in light of the other drama that's been going on. And it's just, at the end of the day, you know, it's just a video game. And it's so good that the franchise has been able to continue. From reviews that have came out this week, seems like people are really enjoying it. If a little bit that the Switch is slightly hindering the true scope that people would hope for the title. But, you know, it's great to see Nintendo investing in third parties to make stuff like this happen.
It is. Should we interpret what Hideki Kamiya said, if he was thanking Nintendo for kicking off Bayonetta 3 development? Does that mean Nintendo instigated the game? It wasn't actually... their company, Platinum Games. It wasn't actually Platinum Games' idea, maybe, to make the third one? Maybe it was Nintendo?
That's the impression I'm getting for it, which... Yeah, I wonder what the legalities of the Bayonetta franchise is like right now, because it seems like Nintendo's almost invested more in it than Platinum Games, because there's the first game. Then Nintendo went ahead and they published Bayonetta 1 and 2 on the Nintendo Wii U. The first game was a PS3 and Xbox 360 exclusive. And then after that, Platinum Games then published it for Steam, and then again... Nintendo's publishing Bayonetta 3 for Nintendo Switch, and of course Super Smash Bros. Alongside many other popular Nintendo characters. It's a lot of money that Nintendo's put into this franchise, and a lot of, you know, hope they have on it for something that's admittedly a little bit off kilter from the core Nintendo IPs. The relationship between Platinum Games and Nintendo is a curious one. It's not as established as some other companies, such as Monolith, for instance, that are purely a Nintendo company. Platinum are on the edge, but Nintendo seems very keen to work with them.
Yeah, it is a fascinating one. And, I mean, thanks to Nintendo. We do enjoy a good bit of Bayonetta. They are good games, and they can keep making them so long as they get better and better with each iteration. Let's move on. Let's talk about Japan, where Kirby's Dream Buffet is getting a novelization of all things coming out on the 14th of December. A novelization of Kirby's Dream Buffet. What?
Yep, and if you're wondering, wait, did that game have a story? Wasn't that game just a party game? You're correct. It didn't really have a story, and it was definitely a party game. It was that Fall Guys version of Kirby, but local. And yeah, it's a very, very odd one to get a novelization. I thought it would have made better sense for a cookbook than anything, but here we are. And the plot, as you could expect from any Kirby franchise, is... seemingly quite bonkers from the synopsis alone. So sadly, I do not read Japanese, so I will only have to wait for Twitter to tell me the lore of Kirby as it expands into the foodiverse.
Well, while you're waiting, and if you want to scare yourself absolutely poopless, then you might want to have a look at Project Zero Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, which, in case you've forgotten, it's a remake of a game that's coming out on the Switch. It's now had an overview trailer and a release date of the 9th of March. But oh my lord, that looks freaky.
Indeed. It's looking good. I'm quite excited to get this title. It's, you know, originally a Nintendo Wii title, and it was, to be honest, a little underloved because it came out incredibly late in the Wii's lifestyle. In the sort of time frame, I believe we were probably talking about the Wii U by the time the first title came out. So now that we're getting it... on the Nintendo Switch, the Switch is a little bit more active. It has a more mature audience, I believe, than the Nintendo Wii had. It's going to be a delightful fit. The port job they've done here does look like it's taken it up a notch from the Wii. I would say maybe to the caliber of, let's say, a Wii U. But to be honest, I think that's all we need. It looks stunning. And I think it's, you know, classic J-horror madness.
Nope, 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 nope. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, let's move into turbo mode.
Yes.
As per tradition, I am going to read through all of these stories, and then you can comment on whichever one you want. So, deep inhalation of breath, and here we go. Infrax's Halloween update has added a character called the Stranger, complete with a hockey mask, machete and shotgun. Cult of the Lamb Halloween update has added Blood Moon Festival, featuring new rituals, followers and decorations available until the 10th of November. Overwatch 2's Halloween update added Halloween Terror event, carrying, it's added co-op missions, Junkenstein's Revenge, Wrath of the Bride, seasonal items and new rewards available until the 8th of November. Blue Fire update has added a level maker and a custom level browser. Fall Guys TARDIS Treats has been updated, adding in Doctor Who characters such as the 4th Doctor, the 10th Doctor, the 13th Doctor and Daleks, available until the 5th of November. Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope has had an update which has provided dozens of bug fixes. Elder Scrolls V Skyrim Anniversary Edition has had an update, fixing frame rate issues. Cow the Kangaroo has got a free ukulele DLC, which is pretty cool. Deadpool, Morbius, Storm and Venom have joined Marvel's Midnight Suns. Curse of the Sea Rats is getting a release date in 2023. WRC Generations has had a release date of the 1st of December 2022. And a data mine of Splatoon 3 by CAD, that's K-A-D, has discovered that Splatoon 3 was planned to have the option for freckles or scars on your Inkling or Octoling, but the idea was scrapped. Jax Pacific has announced the Super Mario Bros. Trademark Kart 24 Volt Ride-On. It is an basically plastic real person slash child sized Mario Kart cart. It can travel 8 miles per hour with three forward speeds. Reverse has an oversized rear wheel so you can drift it just like in the game, and it has authentic in-game sounds complete with the experience of to complete experience with engine sounds, item box effects, superstar mode, and the main theme song from Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I want one so badly. Nintendo of America's YouTube channel has been renamed from Nintendo of America to just Nintendo, and in the process has lost its verification tick. iOS 16.1, iPadOS 16.1, macOS 13, and tvOS 16.1 have added support for Nintendo's classic controllers. Dragon Quest X, or Dragon Quest X if you prefer, Rise of the Five Tribes Offline gets a demo in Japan. Judd and Lil Judd, which if you have no idea where they're from, go check out Splatoon 3. They are getting plushies in Japan, coming out in January of 2023. And speaking of plushies, Kirby's Mouthful Mode variants are also being turned into plushies in Japan, coming out in December 2022. And lastly, more physical copies of Bayonetta 1 are coming later this year. Anton.
The turbo mode this week is as plump as those Kirby plushies. It's a good week to be enjoying downloading things because we've got so many updates. I'm particularly a fan of the Blue Fire one. It looks very robust, and I like the fact it has a custom level browser, because we keep on getting games that add level browsers or add level creators but no ways to share them efficiently. So having a space where you can go and experience the creative genius of other people with more time is always a delight, Alistair. I am delighted to see the ukulele DLC for Cow the Kangaroo, because I just think the characters of ukulele are so incredibly charming. However, it's a little bit of a lie because I see no Lele. There's only Yoka. That is scandalous. And yeah, I'm completely with you. I would absolutely pay way too much money and probably crash into a wall and break my knees, but I would buy an adult-sized version of the Super Mario Kart because it looks fairly cool, and the idea that they've made it so it can drift, that sounds like a broken arm waiting to happen. And yeah, the getting the Nintendo Classic controllers, the NES, SNES, N64 and Sega Genesis controller support for the Apple devices is quite fun. I guess for streaming, that means you could, like, you know, play, I don't know, like Call of Duty mobile with an N64 controller. That sounds like pro gaming if I've ever seen it. And yeah, I really want Square Enix to speak up and get us Dragon Quest X offline over here. I think it's going to be quite an interesting, innovative title, taking a whole very expansive MMO and then condensing it into a single player game. It's such a fascinating experiment, and I'm excited to see how it pans out for them. It's never been done before, or never been done kind of officially by the developers. Maybe been done as a fan compilation, but it's truly something exciting and innovative. And finally, if you're excited for Curse of the Sea Rats, maybe temper your expectations. They have delayed it from 2021 to 2022 to now 2023, so it's a dubious 2023 at the moment.
Yes, I am inclined to agree with you, although it does look pretty good. I mean, it's hand-drawn, what do they call it, a ratoidvania, I think is how to describe it. As they go, it does look quite nice. It's coming together very nicely, and if the wait is worth it, which it looks like it might be, then I'm not going to complain. It looks polished and loved, I think is how I would describe it. It reminds me of 90s early morning cartoons at the weekend. It's got that vibe about it. It's really, really cool. Yes, those Mario Kart carts. Wow. I mean, I'm so annoyed that they're only child size because I can just see the most amazing opportunity there to buy up a whole lot of adult sort of Mario Kart go-karts, buy a bit of land and make a go-kart track, and everybody in the whole of the United Kingdom is coming there because that is going to be the most fun thing in the world, drifting around a go-kart track in a Mario Kart go-kart. Wow.
You know, I don't care that they're kid size. If we ever need to settle a podcast dispute, if there's ever a quiz that has came to a tie at the end of the year, I think this is the only way we have to do it.
I mean, Mike's the only one that will fit in it. You and I are both far too tall to squeeze ourselves into a cart that's designed for a 3-year-old plus. There ain't no way we're getting in there, man. No way. Ain't happening.
Don't tell Mike, he'll win by default.
I do want to mention those Kirby plushies because they are quite adorable. I mean, I'm never in a million years going to go and buy one. It's just not the kind of thing I do. I don't care about plushies. But seeing Kirby in all his many forms is just so cute. They are adorable. They're so fluffy and pink.
Indeed.
I love them. He said in his deepest, most manly voice.
Of course.
Yeah, and I'm going to go from there to talking about World Rally Championship because that's a bit more manly. And it's looking pretty good. But I do have my reservations. Because what I've seen looks very, very good, but I suspect that's what it looks like on a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X, and probably not what it's going to look like on a Switch. Because we just don't have the horsepower, really, and I'm sure the mechanics will work the same, but we might lose some of the prettiness. The visuals in that game are surprisingly good. When I was watching it going, was that, hold on, was that a video? Did they just put video of people driving the car? No, I think that was CGI. Admittedly, it only flashed up pretty quickly, some of the in-car shots and cameras, but they're looking really tasty. Very tasty indeed.
Yeah, it's a franchise I would have loved to get running on the Switch properly. I used to love the Colin McRae Rally games, and we've had a lot of these WRC games, and they were getting better for a bit, but it seems like the plateaued and they're still not quite there. You know, this one is a bit of a bigger entry in the franchise. It's not just a numbered entry, but they've done a lot of these and they still haven't quite got it done right. They're trying, but fingers crossed.
I still haven't quite figured out actually what the game is. It's the full 2022 season in driver lineup. It's added in some Swedish course. And then it's got, I think it's had 8 classic cars. Is that literally it? I mean, I don't know if you've looked into this in any great detail, but I couldn't figure out why they've called it Generations and not one of the newer numbers. I was expecting to look into it and it'd be a whole lot of historic thing going on. And if it's literally just 8 cars in the past, you get that in most rally games. I don't get what I'm missing here.
To be honest, I looked into it and I saw all these classic cars and kind of just racing. I thought it was maybe some like classic cups or something like that. But if that is the case, that's a especially disappointing package.
Yeah, I mean, I may be missing something from what I could see. I didn't dwell on it too much, but I just thought I must be missing something here. Okay, well, I think that's us probably done everything we can do with Turbo Mode, and I think we should probably move on to talk about our rumour.
No, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
Yep, indeed, just the one this week. It's actually going to be a fairly short show. We're only just about half hour mark, but when there's only two of us and there's not actually that much news, it's amazing how quickly we get through this stuff. Well, let's talk about this rumour anyway, because it's one that I quite like. I can't imagine anybody will be too upset about this. So, the head of Xbox Game Studios, Phil Spencer, has claimed that if the Activision Blizzard King acquisition was to go ahead, they would keep Call of Duty multi-platform, treating it like Minecraft, and he would like to bring it to Nintendo devices. To quote him, he said, "We'd like to bring the other popular titles that Activision has and ensure that they continue to be available on the PlayStation and that they also become available on Nintendo." I think that's a pretty good indication. Let's face it, Microsoft have had form recently of bringing sort of exclusive platform games to other places. We've had a few, lot of Microsoft IP, which some of it maybe they've not created themselves, some they've bought in, rare. But they've been quite good at sharing their love around a lot, and I'm struggling to find anything to get angry about in Phil's statement.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of people being quite skeptical of this statement, which I think there's truth to be skeptical. You know, right now, Microsoft is facing a lot of criticism about becoming a monopoly, the consequences of this deal. I think especially the UK is particularly unsure of this acquisition. But to be honest, I do believe there's a bit of truth to this. I think especially if it's not the mainline games, I could see very much that, you know, the big campaign games and their multiplayer is maybe going exclusive to the Xbox platform, in particular the Game Pass for the campaigns and such. But I think a ongoing service like Call of Duty Warzone and especially Call of Duty Mobile seem perfect candidates for keeping and having out as many platforms as possible, leveraging microtransactions. And to be honest, I think that would be a great strategy for Microsoft to take with most of their free-to-play titles. Once it is free-to-play, you know, you don't need to be selling consoles, you're selling the service there. You know, you don't need to sell people on Game Pass, you don't need to sell people on Xbox Live. Why lock it into a platform? You're wanting the microtransactions at that point. And that would make perfect sense. And Activision has such a treasure trove of IP that would be brilliant on Nintendo Switch. And we've seen that with Crash Bandicoot and Spyro and the like. And even expanding further into the library of King IP, all those mobile games could very easily run on Nintendo Switch and probably make them tons of money in the process, whether or not we would be happy about them at all. And I think the thing that makes me hopeful about this happening is the fact that not only have they continued to support Minecraft as a multi-platform product, they have brought subsequent Minecraft games such as Dungeons and Legends to Nintendo Switch. That is going so much of their way. They've brought GoldenEye to Nintendo Switch very recently. And of course, stuff like the Cupheads and Banjo-Kazooies and all that sort of stuff. They've done some real good work.
Yeah, there has been a lot of good stuff come our way. And I mean, as you say, Activision has had some corkers in the past. It's got a really, really long and lengthy history, including Guitar Hero. Just putting that out there. just saying, casually, Guitar Hero. We've already had the Tony Hawk's games. I think they did the first couple of Tony Hawk's games. So, I mean, they have a few games on our platform, and they are a storied and powerful brand that's been around for a very long time. I mean, their catalogue goes back to the 1980s. I mean, they start off on the Atari and whatnot. So there's an awful lot of scope, and there's a lot of IP that could be rebooted and brought to the modern day. And I feel that Microsoft might be more interested in doing that than Activision maybe were themselves. I don't know.
Indeed. You know, one of the comments I've heard from Phil Spencer a few times throughout the years is that they're unhappy that they don't have a lot of kids' IP. Which, looking at the platforms, they don't really, but them getting access to stuff like Spyro, Crash, and many other IPs they probably have in the vault, you know, might not make sense with Toys for Bob doing it when they're also a support studio on Call of Duty Warzone, but, you know, maybe what would a Crash Bandicoot game look like that's developed by Rare? What if you gave Turn 10 the Call of Duty license and they made Call of Duty cart? Who knows? The sky's the limit.
Many options out there, and I think it's quite an exciting one. So, that's us. We have talked about all our rumours. Anton, where can people find us?
Indeed. So, if you'd like to learn more and hear us say the word indeed many, many times a podcast, you can head over to nsukp.co.uk. Over there, we have all the episodes, links to videos, links to all of our socials. Speaking of socials, we are on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. That's NSUK Podcast. We now have an ad on YouTube, so it's all synced up nice and tightly. And if you'd prefer to send an email and speak to our one and only Alistair, that would be podcast@nsukp.co.uk. And while you're over there on the website, Of course, as we've mentioned, you can learn more about the Patreon. We appreciate every single one of you that have came to support us, help us make this show happen. We don't profit a dime from this show. It just keeps the machine turning, and a machine it has become, because we keep ourselves busy with early show notes, with extra shows and mugs and everything. It's quite a project. But it's all exciting. It's all outlined on the website. That's nsukp.co.uk/support-us to learn about the Patreon.
Well done. You know, I was just thinking, we should probably try and get ourselves sponsored by a popular recruitment website, who my neighbour happens to work for. And I mean, we've been giving them a lot of free advertising. We need to start getting paid for this.
My God. It's that seems like smart business moves. One day we'll do them.
Quite. On that note, I'm going to sign off and say cheerio.
Au revoir.